I think for the most part, we're not thinking about the bread when we decide to go. So bread is not necessarily the deciding factor that draws anyone to Tuesday afternoon back porch prayer group. It's a wonderful gathering. There's fellowship. There's a time where we are in a circle for the majority of the time, really, reading through these days in the devotional magazine, and then discussing each day and sharing whatever comes to people's minds. And at the end, there's a time when prayer concerns are shared, and we might look back on the previous week and see what we had prayed about and look ahead with what's coming up and what's on people's hearts, people they want us to carry into God's presence for them. So we do that as well, and we laugh. We laugh a lot because we are goofy people, and so we that comes easily to us, that ability. And then through the grace of our host, Betty Hogan, there often is food, and so we share a meal around a table, and that's usually a wonderful time of additional sharing. And at the food around the table, there is bread. Almost always there is some bread. And the two types of bread that come to mind most are what I would describe as Texas toast, with usually kind of a little seasoning to it. And there's a bit of a debate because Betty likes it to come out looking nice and golden. And then if it goes a little long and gets a little dark in some places, she's not happy, where there's a couple of us that really celebrate that because we like the kind of crunchy edges and so on. So that bread. And then there are days when we get cornbread. And the cornbread is great. The cornbread is marvelous. We had soup, beans, and cornbread a couple of weeks ago, or this week maybe it was. But it was wonderful. And the cornbread's always great. And one of the things that has been a wonderful benefit of being the pastor here is that often after we eat, y'all pack up some food and send it home with the pastor, which becomes lunch the next day or something. So that happens a lot. So I get to take some Texas toast or some cornbread home with me from those things. I, again, don't think anyone is coming to that gathering for the bread. But over the course of time, it's kind of become a basic ingredient. It's a part of the recipe of what's going to happen when we're there. So I'm not sure that it's essential, but it's nice. It's nice that it's there. I'm not sure anyone comes to the Gospels for bread. I'm not sure anybody approaches the Gospels, whether it's Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, and says, I want to read that and see what it says about bread. But if you did come looking for bread in the Gospels, you would find it. And you would find it in abundance. And in the gospel that we've been in, Luke, you would find many, many references to bread. And in all the gospels, I've pulled up the cross-reference of bread in the gospels, and they all have bread that appears throughout as they tell the story of Jesus. And Luke, in particular, just to hit some high points, this is not an exhaustive list. But if you've been reading along, and you will have come across these things already. So in Luke, for instance, we read about Jesus' temptation in the wilderness. And before, when Satan comes to Jesus and says, I will turn, or I invite you, I tempt you to turn these stones to bread. And Jesus declines to do that. And so bread is there. There's a place where Jesus is talking with his disciples. And he's getting ready to send them out to go out on a mission. And one of the instructions he gives to them is, don't take any bread with you. And I think what he's saying in that moment is to rely on the people to take care of you where you're going. That's part of what the expectation you should have is. But it's an interesting thing to say to someone, to not take bread for the journey. There's bread in the feeding miracles. If you think about the feeding of the 5,000 and the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, the 5 loaves of bread, which somehow not only feed enough people that you would think would fit 5 loaves and 2 fish, but feed 5,000 people, including women and children. And beyond that, there are leftovers. So the bread is featured prominently there. There is the prayer that Jesus taught to his disciples when they said, teach us to pray. And Jesus said, okay, here's a prayer that you can pray. Here's exactly, not here's some things you can think about, but here's word for word a prayer you can pray. And among the parts in that prayer says, give us this day our daily bread. Jesus is encouraging them to each day ask God to give them provision for what they need for that day, and does it by way of talking to them about bread. We come to the Gospels, I believe, usually to find Christ, to find Jesus, to find a connection to God through the Jesus that we find there. So we don't come looking for bread. But bread, it turns out, is a basic ingredient to a lot of the stories that we will find when we go immersing ourselves into the Gospels. So this morning's scripture is from Luke 22. We're approaching the end of Luke's Gospel. Just a housekeeping note. If you're reading through Luke's Gospel, and you'll notice that on our schedule we've been taking Sundays off, so if you're reading, you have an off day today, or a day that you're invited to go back and read something that's been important to you. But what that tells you is that next Saturday, the day before Pentecost, will be the last day of that reading schedule, and you'll have completed Luke's Gospel. If you want to do a little extra, there's no gold stars involved, but if you want to do a little extra, jump on to Acts and read the first two chapters of Acts, which continues to be the work of Luke. Acts is part two of what Luke wrote. And the story of Pentecost is in the first two chapters, so the voice that you're going to be hearing when you move from Luke to Acts is the same voice. It's the same narrator telling the story. And we'll be in the end of Luke, but we'll also be into the beginning of Acts next week as we're hearing that story of Pentecost. But it might be a helpful thing to those of you who have been reading it to see that bridge and see how the one story simply continues the other. But today we're in Luke 22, and we have reached a point where we've kind of finished off a piece of Luke's Gospel that goes on for about 12 chapters. So beginning right at the end of the ninth chapter, towards the end of the ninth chapter, there's a verse that I've emphasized a lot where it says, Jesus set his face towards Jerusalem, meaning Jesus had decided that he was going to Jerusalem for the decisive time. That this was not just another trip to Jerusalem, but this was the time when he would go to Jerusalem and scriptures would play out. And in some sense, he knew that he would not be coming back from Jerusalem the same this time. So Jesus sets his face to go to Jerusalem. And then ever since then, if you as you read along, you can hear the story gain intensity. You can feel it pick up urgency as step by step they make their way towards Jerusalem. As village by village, they'll mention Jesus was in a synagogue in this place, and then Jesus was on the Sabbath in a synagogue in another place. And each of those things as it happens, each miracle that occurs, each time Jesus heals someone, each parable that Jesus tells at this point, none of it seems without a little bit of tension to it, some challenge that comes along. Each religious authority that Jesus encounters, and each time he has to say, I do it this way for a reason, and I do it differently than tradition says for a reason. All of it, you can see more and more that for Jesus, not so much for the disciples. I think that they know something's up with Jesus, but I don't think that they're totally on board with understanding all that is meant by this, except in retrospect when they look back at it. But each of those encounters that Jesus has, you can see that more and more, that when Jesus does indeed set his face towards Jerusalem this time, that this will be different. That this will be a happening, a circumstance, an event from which things must change, and change they will. In the midst of all that, we come to this moment, this moment in time where Jesus is now in Jerusalem, and as the passage begins, he's actually outside of Jerusalem on the Mount of Olives, looking over at Jerusalem and sending some of the disciples over to get the place ready where they will share the Passover together. And so he is sending them over, having them get this room prepared for him. And there's this moment where all of that buildup, all of that anxiety, all of that tension, for a moment, gets set aside for food. For, in a way, when I talk about the Tuesday back porch prayer group, it is a place where, for a moment, we can just kind of be in that space, and whatever you bring with you, you can kind of leave at the door and just enjoy the fellowship. And then if you want to, you can pick it up as you leave. Well, for Jesus and for the disciples, in a way, this is a familiar celebration. This is a time for them to be together, to share the Passover again. But they're going to gather around tables, which they do all the time. And they're going to fellowship as they do all the time. And the tension of the journey for a moment can slip away, and they can be there, and they can have this time where that stuff is not a part of what's going on. Jesus takes this opportunity to work with them just a little bit more, to teach them just a little bit more. And we see that nothing's been resolved. Nothing's been learned entirely yet. Jesus is talking with them about how someone's going to betray him. And there's two things that occur to the disciples in this moment when Jesus is talking to them. Someone's going to betray me, one of you. And their first thought is to say, no, it's not me. It can't be me. Who is it? Their second one, amazingly, is, and again, which one of us is the greatest? How does that come into your mind when your leader has just told you one of you will betray him? And your first thought is, can we leave that for a moment and go back to the which one of us is greatest question? So if you're Jesus, I feel like there's a part of you that's a little bit frustrated at this point. After you've done all this work, you've done all this time, and you've come all the way to Jerusalem, and it's all about to happen, and it's clear that these folks who you're counting on to hand all of this to are still struggling with getting the message. But Jesus, in infinite patience, talks with them about how the first shall be last, and the greatest needs to be the least, and the one who wants to be ahead of everyone must be the servant of all, and again, reviews all of that with them. So as all this is going on, as he's having these further discussions, these last moments where he's trying to make an impression on his friends and about the work he's preparing them for, and as he's actually struggling with the reality that one of these people he's invested all this time in, who's there at the table with him, is going to leave the room to go and betray him, and as all this is happening, Jesus has this moment of just fellowship with them. And he celebrates the Passover with them. But he celebrates the Passover with them in a way that has to open their eyes a little bit, that has to make them say, what's exactly happening here? Because this is different. This is not what we normally hear. This is not what is normally said. So all of those things were undoubtedly part of it, but Jesus puts in a new thing. He takes bread as they're gathered around that table, and he breaks it. And he gives it to them, and he said, this is my body given for you. That was not something they were anticipating. That was outside of the things that they were expecting when they gathered around this table. And yet there's Jesus with that bread in his hand, handing it to them. This is my body given for you. Then they leave that place. The journey goes on. The journey continues to what first is its gruesome conclusion. Jesus is arrested. Jesus is tried. And Jesus is crucified. And the journey goes on beyond that to a place where only God can take journeys, so that beyond death, there's resurrection. Beyond the last thing, beyond the worst thing, there's the best thing. Beyond the place of hopelessness, there is hope. Bread was not the reason that they followed him, but bread for them, I suspect, after that moment would never be the same again. Every time they had a piece of bread, they were thinking about that time when Jesus handed them a piece of bread and said, "This is my body given for you." It changed them. It changed them irreversibly. It changed them forever. Here is the thing. When we encounter Christ, it changes us forever. Just as it changed the disciples, it changes us. You can't encounter Christ and be the same afterwards. When we reorient our lives to Jesus, and reorient is a different way of saying when we choose to follow, when Jesus says, "Follow me," and we say, "Yes, that's what I want to do," our lives can't help but change. Because when we follow someone, it means I'm going to make that person's priorities my priorities. And if I make that person's priorities, my priorities are no longer my priorities. And that means I have to rethink everything. I have to go over in my mind everything that I do through the lens of Jesus rather than through the lens of just what is best for me or what I want at any particular moment. Everything becomes about Him. Now, that doesn't mean it always plays out that way for us. I mean, it doesn't play out for me that way every day, any day. It's a effort. It is a challenge to follow Jesus because Jesus goes places that sometimes I resist. Jesus wants to take me to places that sometimes I want to resist. And sometimes I see shiny things or interesting things and I go towards them and don't realize Jesus has gone somewhere else. Jesus is patient with us in that. And He waits for us to relocate Him and begin to follow again. But there's never a time after we choose to follow Him when we are not at some level thinking about where Jesus is and what I should be doing in relationship to Him. It turns out that is true even with bread. Even with something as basic as bread. What I would encourage you to do is watch for the bread in your life this week. Watch how bread shows up in your life. So maybe it's breakfast. I know at our house in the morning, it turns out I'm a weird combination of night person and morning person. But my wife is not a morning person, so she has to kind of ease her way into the day. And one of the ways we've developed of helping that to happen is I'll usually get her breakfast together for her, which is no major chore. It's usually some bacon, which makes anyone's day happier. And a couple of pieces of toast with blackberry spread on one and orange marmalade on the other. But maybe toast is a part of your morning regimen. Maybe a biscuit. Whatever it is, if you have that bread there in the morning, remember that Jesus handed us this bread. And think about this bread that you have before you. And think about the day that you have before you. And be thinking about how thankful you are that God's given you this day and this meal to have as you begin that day to care for yourself and give you the fuel you need to move through it. Maybe lunchtime is a sandwich. Maybe just a simple sandwich. Maybe you're a peanut butter and jelly person, but maybe there's a sandwich there. And typically, with most sandwiches, I hear it can be done now that you can have a breadless sandwich, but most sandwiches, I think, involve bread. If you had bread in your hands at lunchtime, give thanks. Give thanks for the way that God's caring for you up to that point in the day. And look forward to the rest of the day with expectation and with thankfulness that God has provided for you, and you look forward to that continued provision. Maybe bread is part of your evening meal. Maybe not the featured dish. Honey, we're having bread tonight. But maybe you have a roll, something to complement the rest. Maybe like we do on Tuesdays, maybe you've got some Texas toast or you've got a cornbread or whatever it is. When you see that bread in the evening, again, use it as a time to be reminded of the bread that Christ has given to us and the way that God has cared for us. And think about your own life that day. And where have you followed Jesus well? And where have you lost sight of him and need that moment to ask God's forgiveness for whatever it is that's happened during that day? And make your peace with Jesus there and be thankful for the day and ask God to give you a night's rest so that you can begin to do it all again the next day. One of the most memorable things, and this is probably true for most people who travel anywhere outside of their own culture and the things that they're used to, but one of the most memorable things about the trips to the Holy Land has been the food in the Holy Land. The food that was there, just, there's some wonderful things that you can find here, but they're not the same as when you have it there. And there's a number of things that fit that category, but it sounds like a strange thing maybe to highlight, but the bread is unbelievable over there. Just, there's so much variety. I think of the hummus and pita bread. And just swipe aside any pita that you had sort of in a bag or off the shelf, and think about the pita that's fresh out of the oven and it's warm and they're bringing it to you with the hummus. It is astounding how good pita bread could be. They have these things that I always thought of them as these long rolls that the street vendors sell, but I didn't know what they were called, but I searched around and found out that a name for them is Jerusalem bagels. I almost hesitate to tell you that because it looks nothing. It looks like a bagel that you could wear around your neck. It's big and very inexpensive, and they're out there in the morning and they walk around with these trays and they've just come from wherever their oven is, and those things are phenomenal. And for some of us who are really into what the health department rating is, you might be a little leery of some of the folks, but if you can set that aside, which I can easily do, it's great. It is great. That bread is amazing. And then they have a buffet. Now, buffets typically are not astounding, but what was astounding at these buffets is the diversity of the bread. There'd be a table, an entire table just for the bread. And they'd have these baskets turned on their side, and they'd have rolls coming out of the baskets and all colors and textures and sizes. And beyond that, so, you know, other types of breads with some jellies off to the side for them. But the bread in the morning or the bread in the evening, the bread seemed always to be with us. So many varieties. All of them delicious, and all of them unique. When Jesus chose bread and said, "Take this bread and remember me," there's very few things he could have chosen that would have come up as often and as regularly and as happily in daily life as bread. I was thinking about this morning as I was running through this in my mind. I thought, Jesus really knew what he was doing, which it seems like, as I thought about that, I laughed because I was like, of course Jesus knew what he was doing. But Jesus chose just the thing to sort of always have in front of us, the thing that would say to us, be reminded of me when you have these things. So as we encounter bread, let us remember the one who set his face towards Jerusalem and made that journey regardless of the cost. Let us remember the one who shared a meal with his friend and took bread and blessed it and broke it and gave it to them and said, "This is my body given for you." That one who left that room and was arrested and tried and went to a cross and then happiness, an empty tomb. It turns out that maybe we actually do come for the bread. Thanks be to God. Amen.